Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Tonight's cheer is actually sponsored by my parents in honor in Lezecher Nishmas, my grandmother, my father's mother, Manya Bas Reb Shimon Halevi. So her neshama should have an aliyah and she should have nachas from all of her great-grandchildren.
Amen.
Okay, so tonight's topic is the topic of Ein Adam Makne Davar Shlei Bala Olam. So it's the concept that a person can't affect a transaction on objects that are not yet extant in the world. So we'll give some examples as we go along. I thought it was interesting to begin the topic from an unconventional way. So we're going to talk about from the Chumash. We usually don't associate like the stories in Chumash with halacha, and they don't usually serve as a basis for halacha. It's sort of like a different discipline, if you will. We usually use the Chumash for Musar or for Divrei Torah and things like that. But it's very interesting how the Poskim they open the topic based on the story in the Chumash in the Torah. So now we're all familiar with the story. Vayomer Esav al Yaakov. So Esav comes home from a day in the field, and Esav says to Yaakov, "Haliteini na min ha'adoim ha'adoim hazeh, pour down my throat this red soup, ki oyef anoichi, because I'm tired." So the pasuk continues, "Al kein karash moy Edoim." So that's how he got the name Edoim. This is actually a derogatory. This reflects negatively on Esav. It's a derogatory statement, because it's a criticism, because he was willing to sell the whole Bechora and everything that it entails, the firstborn rights, his position in the family or in the destiny of Klal Yisrael. He was prepared to sell it all just for the momentary pleasure of the red soup. So because of that, he's stamped with this moniker of Edom. Vayomer Yaakov. So Yaakov says, "Michra kayom es bechoros chali." So Yaakov says, "You want the red soup? So sell to me today your bechora, your firstborn rights." So Vayomer Esav. So Esav says, "Hine anoichi hoylech lomos," that behold, I'm on my way to go and dying. But lomazeli bechora, what use do I have with the bechora? So he's prepared to sell it. Vayomer Yaakov. So Yaakov says, "Hishava li kayon," take an oath, swear to me, take a sacred oath. So Esav took the oath, and he sells his Bechora to Yaakov. So this is the famous story in Bereshis. This is what Yaakov did to procure the Bechora before he went in to receive the blessings from his father Yitzchak. And apparently there was a transaction that Esav sold his Bechora to Yaakov. So now, of course, in the Midrashim and in the Svarim, we don't really comprehend exactly what Esav was selling to Yaakov. Was he selling something spiritual? Was he selling something tangible? And the Mefarshim explained that this sale included things on many levels, and he also gave up his firstborn rights. Rashi and Chumash brings the service in the future Beis HaMikdash, the ability to serve as a Bechor, as a Kohen, before the Chet HaEgel, and all the spiritual destiny of what the Bechor in Klal Yisrael represents, and Yaakov was able to pass that Bechorah on and give it to Yosef. So a lot of things were included in this sale. But the Mefarshim bring that on a very basic level, at the very least, something something tangible that we could actually understand. The Gemara in Soita says the following, another famous story that we all know. Kivin shegiu lema'ora ha-machpela. So this was the funeral procession of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, this is way after having purchased the Bechorah. This is after they already went down to Mitzrayim. So we know the story that Yaakov Avinu was living in Mitzrayim. He passed away. Yosef received permission from Paro to go on the funeral procession out of Mitzrayim back to Eretz Yisrael to bury his father in the Ma'aras Machpelah. So it says, "Kivin shegiu lema'ara ha-machpela." Once they reached the cave of Machpela, "Asa Esav." So Esav came. A famous story. "Kama akiv and he was holding up the funeral. He was protesting, he was objecting to burying Yaakov in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Omer lahen. So Esav says, Mamre Kiryas HaArba, hi Chevron. So the name of this place is Mamre Kiryas HaArba, hi Chevron. That's the name of this location. And we refer to it as Kiryas HaArba, the city of the four. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchak says, the Mefarshim say that obviously Esav wasn't quoting Rabbi Yitzchak, but Rabbi Yitzchak explains why it was called Kiryas HaArba, and this was implied in Esav's objection to Yaakov. But Omer Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kiryas HaArba, what is the four that we're referring to? Arba Zugais HaYisham. There are four pairs that are destined to be buried in the Ma'aras HaMachpel. That's why it was called Kiryas HaArba originally, from the very beginning of time. Adam and Chava, that's one pair. Avram and Sarah is the second pair. Yitzchak for Rivka is the third pair. And Yaakov and Leah is the fourth pair. So says Esav, Iu kovra leleah bididei. So basically, there's only eight spots in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Ihu kovra leleah bididei. So Esav claims that Yaakov used up his spot with Leah. Bahai de payish didihu. And the remaining plot is mine. So he wants to be buried. Esav wants to reserve this plot of land in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah for himself. So Amrulei, so the children of Yaakov, the Shvatim, they say to Esav, Zevinta, you sold it. Amrulehu, so Esav says, Nihi dizvini bichirusa. So Esav admits, he acknowledges, it's true that I sold the Bechoira. I sold the double portion. So the way the double portion works is, imagine if there are two sons. Imagine if Yaakov and Esav would be inheriting their father, Yitzchak. So we would divide Yitzchak's estate into three parts, and Esav the Bechor would have received two of the portions, as if he represented two sons. He takes a double portion, and Yaakov would get the remaining third of the estate. So Esav is claiming that when I sold my estate, I did not mean to sell out everything completely, that I should be left with nothing. I sold my schus to divide the estate into three parts and get two out of the three, to get two-thirds of the estate. I sold that right, and we should divide it 50-50. So you already used up your spot in the Ma'aras Machpelah for Leah, and now I want to the second spot reserved for myself. That's what Esav is telling me. Nihid zvini bechirusa. I sold the rights to get two-thirds of the estate. Pishitusa mizvini, did I sell the rights to get a simple slot, to get half? In other words, I want to knock it, all that my intention was to knock it down from two-thirds, from 66% to 50%. That's it. Amrulei, they said back to Esav, in. Yes, you did sell. Diksiv, bekivri asher karisili, because Yaakov says that I purchased this kever. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum of Shimon ben Yoitzadok ein kira el loshen mechira. That the word kira, which could sometimes be translated as I dug it for myself, it means I purchased it for myself. So even though Avram Avinu was the one who purchased it originally from Ephron, but Yaakov says that I purchased this special from Esav in order to get the entire, whatever was left of this Ma'aras HaMachpelah for myself. El Loshen Mechira, Ein Kira El Loshen Mechira. The word Kira doesn't just mean that he dug the kever for himself, it means he purchased it for himself. She came to Karche Hayam, because abroad, in the Karche Hayam, across the sea, in the islands of the sea, Karin LeMechira Kira, they refer to the sale as the word Kira. So when Yaakov says, Karisili, I dug this for myself, he's also alluding to the fact that he purchased it from Esav. So Omer Lahu, so Esav says, Havuli igarta. Where's the shtar? It's like a sugya in Baba Basra. Cheskas Abatim. Where's the shtar? You're claiming that you purchased this estate, that you purchased this Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Where's the shtar? Amrulei, they said to Esav, igarta va'arad Mitzrayim hi. We left the document, we left the deed back in Mitzrayim. Uman Nezel, so who's going to go fetch the deed? Nezel Naftali. Naftali should run. Dekalil ki ayalta. Because he is as light-footed, he's as quick on his feet as an ayalta, as a hart, like a deer. Diksiv, like it says, Naftali ayala shlucha, hanoisein imre shefer. So, Omer avavo, al tikre imre shefer, ela imre sefer. So the pasuk, the bracha to Naftali was, that he's able to get the words of the Sefer, of the Shtar, and it's a reference, it's an allusion to this story that Naphtali would go back and get the Shtar. We know the outcome of the story, that Hushim ben Dan, he says what's going on here, and he bashes, he hits, he bops Esav on the head and kills him. Tosfos says in Gittin that it was actually Yehuda who gave him the final blow. We once mentioned that. So this is the story of the Gemara in Saito. What do you see from this story? This is something to discuss in and of itself. You see from this story that even Esav acknowledged that when he sold the Bechaira, and we mentioned that the Mefarshim talk about how a lot of things were included in the Bechaira, the sale, the spirituality, the Ruchnias, the destiny. But practically speaking, Esav acknowledged that he sold his double portion in his father's inheritance. And when push came to shove, when it was time to collect it, to divide up the estate, at the very least, Esav acknowledged that he already sold his schus, his right, his privilege to inherit 66% of Yitzchak's estate, and he's only claiming 50%. And then they went ahead and said that you even sold that, because Yaakov says he purchased that as well, and he had a deed to prove it. So you see from all of this that the mechira that was nizkar in the pasuk is at the very least the chelik bachor and the chelik pshitusa for the nechsei av. So we have to now turn back the clock, going back to when Esav came home from the field tired from a day at work doing the various sins that Chazal say he was doing in the field. He comes home after a day of work exhausted, and he sees soup with Yaakov Avinu. He asks for the soup, and Yaakov says, I'll give you the soup on one condition, that you sell the Bechaira. Now at that point, Yaakov and Esav were young boys. Yitzchak was very much alive at that point. So the question is, the sale that took place then, which the Gemara in Saita tells us clearly, at the very least, was referring to the future privilege of inheriting Yitzchak, that sale was affected on future land. The Ma'ara Samachpela. Right now, the Ma'ara Samachpela belongs to Yitzchak, and Esav is selling, at the very least, his portion in the Ma'ara Samachpela to Yaakov before Yitzchak even passed away. He's selling something that's not yet his. He's selling something that's going to come in the future. So, in item Gimel, we all know the rule, the Gemara says it in many places, Ein adam makne davar shloi bala oilam, that a person is not able to affect a sale. You cannot transfer ownership on something that's not yet extant. And we're going to talk about the examples. We're going to give two examples as we go along. So hikshu ha-poiskim v'ha-meforshim. So all the meforshim, all the commentaries ask, that seemingly, how can Esav sell his portion of the inheritance before he acquired it? How is Esav able to sell the chelik of his Yerusha before his father Yitzchak passes away? That's before he acquired it himself. He does not yet have a chelik in the Ma'ara Samachpela to sell. I want to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a little different than selling you the Brooklyn Bridge, because the Brooklyn Bridge, I never ended up getting it myself. So the whole thing is a hoax. I'm selling you something that lo'hayav lo'nivra, I never even had it and I never will have it. Over here, Esav is destined to get it, because when Yitzchak passes away, Esav is on deck to inherit 66% of the estate. So he wants to affect the transaction now, that it should be effective upon the death of Yitzchak. How can you affect the transaction now before the item in question is actually yours? Ein adam makna davar shloi bala oilam, a person is not able to affect the transaction on something that's not yet in his hands. It has not yet come into the world, or has not yet come into his hands.
The, can we say the fundamental difference here, that this rule would not apply by Yerusha?
So we're going to see. The Gemara Bava Metzia says explicitly that it applies to Yerusha. Mamish, this case, the Gemara Bava Metzia says it applies here as well, and we're going to touch on that as well. Now, the Rivash, a Talmud of the Ran, a big Paisik. So I just on the side, like I mentioned before, I found the whole thing interesting, that we're actually like dissecting the story in the Torah as if it has practical halachic ramifications, which is really what the Rivash is going to say. Says the Rivash, Oid Kosafta. So the Rivash writes to the petitioner, to the question, to the one who sends him a question, the Rivash responds, Oiv Kosafta, you also wrote, Shereisa Kosov Bishem Harav Rabbeinu Yaakov Ben Harash, that you found, you heard, that something written in the name of Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the great Rosh Rabbeinu Asher, Rabbi Yaakov, the Tur, the one who wrote the Tur, and the one who wrote the commentary on the Chumash, the Bala Turim, and the one who wrote the Sefer on Halacha, the Arba Turim. So you heard, you saw in the name of Rabbi Yaakov ben Harosh, Shekosa b'shem Aviv Harosh, the Hamaknet Dovresh Leibola Oilam, somebody who indeed attempts to sell something that's not yet in the world, Im Nishba Al Kocha Shekona Hakoina. So the Rush writes, you claim that the Tur writes in the name of his father, the Rush, that if the Makne, if the one who's selling, even though he doesn't own it yet, if he takes a sacred oath, if he's Nishba, if he takes a Shvua, then Kona HaKoina, then the Koina acquired it. Afilu Meis HaMakne, and even if the Makne passes away, HaMekach Kain. What does he mean when he says, even if the Makne passes away? Even if the Makne passes away, so the children are not obligated to honor the oath of their father. In other words, what the Rush is saying, the Rush is precluding, when I say that the mechira is chal, that the sale takes effect on account of the oath, I do not simply mean, says the Rush, that the makne, that really the sale was not effective because it was loy bala oil, but the makne is bound by his shvua. He took a shvua, yoredeya, he promised to give it. He took an oath to give it. So even though legally the effect of the sale was not effective, but he took an oath. So says the Rush, even if the Makna passes away, where the children are not obligated to honor their father's oath, they never took an oath, nevertheless, they have to deliver the goods over to the Koina. And the reason is because it's not because of the oath. It's not just because of the Shvua. It's because it was literally Chal, the Mekach. So even though the Makna passed away, the Mekach is Kayim. The Rayasai, what's the Rush's proof? Our story, because Esav sold the Bechira to Yaakov, and that's why Yaakov told Esav to swear. When we're reading the Parsha, it's not immediately clear why did Yaakov ask Esav to take a Shavua. You don't always do that when you purchase something from somebody. You don't require the moicher to take a shvua. Why did Yaakov require the moicher to take a shvua? So he shovali. So says the Rush that we're deriving from here. We're learning a halacha from here that you can be maknet davresh lebala olam if you take a shvua, if you ratify it with a shvua. It's not just bound by the halacha of the shvua of the avera of lo yachel, but it actually causes the transaction to be effective. The shvua, which is just yoredeya, it somehow ratifies the cheshen mishpat of the sale, and the sale is effective. That's what the Rivash received from someone. Kshuva. So now this is the Rivash's response. Now look at the Rivash. He says pretty harsh words. The Rivash responds to this. Lav harosh zal. This is a forgery. This is not from the Rush. V'loi harav Rabbeinu Yaakov chasim yala, nor is it the Tur, the son of the Rush, Rabbeinu Yaakov. They're not signed on this. We have to be mekayim the chasimis here. We have to verify the signatures because this seems like a forgery. I don't believe the Rush would ever say such a thing, and I don't believe that Rabbi Yaakov, the Balaturim, the son of the Rush, would ever say such a thing in the name of his father. The eini roya litlois begavri rabbi kavasayhu. I do not think it's appropriate to attribute this to such great people, the Rush and the Balaturim. Svarazu, she'ein lo alma shetismoich. It has no leg to stand on. This doesn't make any sense. Gam haraya shehevu bishma. And even the proof that we're bringing, ein lo ikar. It doesn't have a basis. And this is what I was thinking. Lefisha hayakoydem adibor. Because it was before the Torah was given. But you can't, and this is the Rivash, this is exactly what we were thinking, that the Rivash says you can't draw any halachic conclusions from something that occurred before Matan Torah. It was a different world back then. It's almost like that was the Wild West. That's a different world back then. Before the Torah was given, you can't at all bring a proof, you can't at all prove that a person could sell something that's not yet in the world, and the fact that he took an oath doesn't make a difference. Now, someone just sent in, what role does the soup play in the story? So the soup was the shavi kesef. The soup was the money that Yaakov used to give. He was giving it in the form of shavi kesef. He was giving food in order to pay for the future ma'aras ha-machpelah. So it seems that the sale was effective. And in addition to paying Esav for the field by giving him the red soup, he also required Esav to take an oath. Says the Rivash that I don't believe that the Rush would ever draw any halachic conclusion from the story. This all occurred before Matan Torah. I never heard of such a thing, says the Rivash, that a shavua would change the halacha. Ain other machadavar shlebala oilam. Go ahead, Toby.
But we all said that the Abbas all knew Kala Torah Kula before Matan Torah.
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. So.
The other question I had,
and they invited in there to grow.
May a little bit of a joke is, who says that the soup was a sharper proof?
Yeah. So, okay. So the truth of the matter is, Toby, that's actually a good question. So the truth of the matter is, there's a discussion in the Gemara. I'll answer the second point first. There's a discussion in the Gemara if Esav had the status of a Jew or a non-Jew, and the Gemara actually says that regarding non-Jews, even less than a pruta is considered to be kesef. So number one, I wouldn't accuse Yaakov of his soup not being even worth a pruta. So probably Yaakov's soup was good enough to even be worth a pruta. But Esav, who let's assume he was not Jewish, there's a discussion in the Gemara about it. So maybe he would be willing to sell something even for less than a pruta. So it could be that the payment was in place. And that was the second point. And the first point, that they keep the whole Torah before Matan Torah, again, that applied to the mitzvahs. So Yaakov kept all the mitzvahs, and they were in Eretz Israel at that time. They kept all the mitzvahs, but Esav clearly wasn't keeping the mitzvahs. So the interaction between Yaakov and Esav might have had the status of an interaction of a Jew between a Jew and a non-Jew. And you can affect... This is a Mekach HaMemka, this is Choshev Mishpat, and therefore that's why they were able to affect the sale on a Loi Bala Olam, because it was before Matan Torah, so they were not bound by the technicalities of a Mekach HaMemka, the laws of transaction they were not bound to. That's what the Rivash says. The Rivash says you can't prove anything from Koidim HaDibor when we're talking about the transactions. You're right, Toby, like, we know they kept the whole Torah, but this was a transaction, and he was dealing with Esav. Esav didn't keep the Torah. You really can't draw any halachic conclusions from the fact that a sale occurred before the dibur on Aloy Baloy. That's what the Rivash says. Uman leimalon shloihaya adam makna az davish lebaloy. Who says that that wasn't common practice? And the oath, says the Rivash, the oath was just l'ravcha de milsa. The oath was just the cherry on top, just to ratify the sale. Shloya arer Esav v'davar, that Esav shouldn't challenge the sale later on. Ki hekiru Yaakov kizod yohir v'ish zroya l'fika cheshbio. Because Yaakov knew who he's dealing with. He's dealing with Esav, a criminal. So he knew that a word is a word. If he gets Esav to swear to take an oath that he's not going to challenge the sale, so hopefully that'll work. I mean, we see in the story that even that didn't work. Esav did challenge the sale. But in any case, you can't draw any halacha conclusion from the story. Now, the Emma says it's fascinating that in item Hay, recently, in the relative recent history, so it was Yotze L'Or Pirush HaTorah L'Torah, that it's actually, it is printed, although the Rivash never saw this, and although the Rivash challenges its validity, but it actually is printed in the Chumash, the Balat Turim, that this exact pshat that he says over from his father. So really, the petitioner in the Rivash was correct, that this is said in the name of the Rush. So let's learn the Balat Turim together on this parsha. Says the Balat Turim, Tema, ma mecher shayach bebechayra she'enu davar shenitzvas bekinin. So the Balat Turim himself grapples with what exactly was Esav selling. She'enu davar shenitzvas bekinin. This is not something that's subject to a kinin. Ve'imishum yerushas pishnaim. And if we're talking about the physical, the tangible, monetary inheritance of the estate. This is where he talks about it. Hakaimalon, here's the Gemara Ezra. This is a Gemara in Bab Metzia. We'll talk more about it later. Mashi Irish me'abba mochaloch. This is a Gemara Mefurish in Bab Metzia in Shnayim Yechzen. Ma she'irish mi'aba mocharlach. If a person says, I'm going to sell you that which I will inherit from my father in the future, le'omar klum, the sale is not valid. It's void. It's nothing. Le'omar klum, he didn't say anything. So that's what the Torah writes. Ve'ovi adoini harosh zal, medaktik mikan. So says the Baal HaTurim, that my father, the Rosh, learned from here, Misha Moichel Lachaveroi, somebody who sells his friend, Dabar She'en Hakinin Chalalov, if you're selling something which ordinarily would not be subject to sale, because the Kinyan can't be Chal, Kegoin Masha Irish Me'aba, like in our example, that you're trying to sell something that you will eventually inherit from your father, Oy Misha Moichel Milva Alpe, or if a person is selling a verbal loan, there's no documentation of the loan. If you owe me money and I have a shtar, so there is a procedure how to sell that loan to someone else. I can give the shtar over. I can write another shtar on this shtar. Ksiva u'mesira. There's a machlokes Rebbe in the Rabbanan. But an oral loan, there's actually no midoraisa method or mechanism to sell that loan. So if you sell it with a shvua, says the Rush, it would help. Says the Rush, the Nishbalov, if he takes an oath, Hamecher Chal Mikoyach HaShvua. So the sale is valid because of the oath. And this is what we alluded to before. Loi mi boy shekoifin oisei l'kaimu bishvil shvua. The Rush himself writes, I don't mean to say, it goes without saying, that you would force the one who took the oath to follow through on fulfilling his oath. But more than that, says the Rush, afilu shei mecher alav, it's even considered to be a sale, as we see in our parsha, the korele mecher b'shvil ha'shvua, that because Esav took an oath, the pasuk, the Torah, refers to it as a mecher. Yimkor hayoim, sell to me your becher. So we actually have, it turns out, item vav. So after all is said and done, the Rivash heard about this, he objected, he even said that he can't even believe that the Rush would ever have said such a thing, but we actually have it in print, that the Baal HaTurim, it's printed in the Sefer Baal HaTurim, that the Rush indeed derives such a halacha. So in item vav nimtza, we see from all of this that we have to take this as a machlekes. The Rivash argues with the Rush in the Torah if a mechira on something that's not yet in the world is chal through a shvua or not. The Rivash holds that a shvua is not mala umar. You can't sell something that doesn't exist yet. It's not yours yet to sell. Taking an oath is neither here nor there. It's not going to give any sort of oomph or any sort of ratification to the sale. You might be bound by your oath, but if the person passes away, his children are not bound by the father's oath, the sale is not valid. It's not monetarily, it's not, the transaction was ineffective. Maybe you took an oath, but it will not create a valid sale. However, the Rush says that it does work. Now, let's talk about some of the examples, just that we should know what we're talking about, what we're referring to. Let's cite a few examples of selling something that's not yet in the world. So in item Zion, there are many dugmaos. There are many examples in the Gemara of a mechiras davar shel bal olam. So it's a sugi in Yevamis, among other places, and there's a whole list of examples there in Yevamis about davar shel bal olam. So we have example. This is the famous one. Itmar hamoicher peiris dekal lechaver. Imagine if I have a tree in my backyard that every season it produces apples. I say to you, I'm going to sell my future apples that are not yet in the world, but I know that my apples are going to grow next season. So let's make a transaction now. Give me money now. Give me chalip, and let's make a transaction now, or make a chazaka now, some kind of transaction, and you will acquire the apples when they bloom and blossom. You'll acquire the apples. So Rav says, so this is interesting. Before the apples grow, you can certainly retract, because this is for sure that the transaction is not effective until the apples grow. You don't own something that doesn't exist. So even if you could sell these apples, you can retract, you can change your mind before the apples come into existence. But once the apples come into existence, you're not able to retract because the sale was effective. Rav is of the opinion that you could sell something that's not yet in the world. Rav's opinion is like Rav Meir, that Adam is machne darvish lebal olam. A person could sell that which is not yet his. eventually it would be his. He could make a transaction now, and it'll be effective when it comes into the world. So Rav holds that a person could affect the transaction before it's in the world. It's just important to note that even Rav, even if you could affect the transaction, you can still retract before the item comes into the world. So even if Esav would have held that you're able to sell a loy bala oilam, before Yitzchak passes away, he would certainly be able to retract and void the sale because he didn't yet get it. Esav didn't wake up until after Yitzchak passed away. It was too late to retract it, even according to Rav. But you can certainly retract before it comes in the world. However, Rav Nachman argues, and this is how the halacha follows Rav Nachman, af mi shebo la'olam yochal lachzer bo, even after the fruit come into the world, you can retract. Why? And that's the halacha, conventional halacha, because ein adam makna davar shloim la'olam, because you cannot affect the sale before the peiros come into the world. That's how we paskin, and that's why everybody's asking that even if Esav did not retract from the sale, since the transaction was performed before Esav inherited the land from his father Yitzchak, the transaction should automatically be void, even if Esav did not retract from the sale. Now, we're going to get to a few of the things that people are asking. Now, the Gemara says that even Rav Nachman agrees. Now, this is also another important point just to understand the concept. There is a way to sell apples that are not yet here, because Rav Nachman agrees that in Mochar Dekel Peiroisov, the Mahani, that it sounds like it's semantics, but there's a fundamental difference. I can't sell you the apples before they're here, but I can sell you the tree that is extant, that is in existence. I can sell you the tree for its apples. In other words, there's a tree in my backyard, and right now it's barren, but it's going to grow apples. I can't sell you the apples. And if I attempt to sell you the apples, the sale is void. Even when the apples finally grow, the apples are not yours. However, I could word the transaction, I'm selling you the tree. I'm not selling you the tree that you can cut down the tree and use it for firewood. The wood is mine. It's my tree. But I'm selling you the tree for its apples. You own the tree vis-a-vis the production capabilities of the tree. So that you can do because the tree is here. You can split. You can look at the tree as a graph, and you can take the apple producing component of the tree that you can buy now. And therefore, just like if I own a tree and the tree produces the apples are automatically mine because they grew from my tree. So we can consider the tree yours vis-a-vis its productive capabilities, the apples that it will eventually produce. So I can't sell you the apples directly, but I can sell you the tree for its apples. That's not going to help you when it comes to Yerusha, right? Yerusha, the item in question, is not yet here in the world. There's no way around that to sell something that's here now. There's nothing to sell because I don't own the land yet. When it comes to the apples of a tree, there is something theoretically you can word the transaction, you can focus the transaction on the tree itself, and then that will give you the apples memela. That'll give you the apples automatically because you purchased the tree vis-a-vis its productive capabilities, to that the apples that grow later will automatically be yours, not because you purchased the apples, but because you purchased the tree vis-a-vis its apples. That's one example. There's another example, and we're going to soon see the same distinction that we just made regarding the apple of the tree or the tree for the apple. There's another example in the Gemara. Imagine if a woman makes a neder. So the woman is a sheba. We all know in a marriage, it's a two-way street. There's also, besides the marriage, the husband and the wife, there's also a sort of a contractual agreement that the husband is obligated to support his wife, and the wife is actually, there's maisi and dayan, the wife is actually required to produce an income, and the husband is allowed to take that income in return for the fact that he supports his wife. Now, imagine if the wife is not happy and she makes a neder and she says to her husband, "Konum sha'ani oisa l'picha, I'm making a neder that you cannot derive any benefit from that which I produce." Now, she's supposed to, whatever she produces, she has certain marital obligations. She's supposed to produce an income, and the husband's entitled to some of that income. Ain't sarach lahafir. So the halacha is that the husband does not even have to bother annulling that vow. The vow he can dismiss the vow because she can't preclude him from taking her Ma'asi Yadayim because it's Meshuvit. Rabbi Kiva Omer Yefu. Rabbi Kiva says, he gives advice that you should formally annul the vow. Why? Because it's true she's required to produce a certain amount a day. However, Shema Hidif Olav Yosef in a royal way, maybe she's going to produce more than he's entitled to, because there's a certain point where anything, it's called harvacha, anything she produces beyond that point, she's entitled to keep. There's a certain percentage of her income that she's obligated to produce for her husband if she can. Anything above and beyond that, she's really entitled to keep for herself. So when she made a neder that she's disavowing her husband from any of her produce, any of her income, so she doesn't have the right to assert him, to preclude him, let's say, just for argument's sake, from 66%, but the remaining 33%, that the neder would be chal. So Rabbi Kiva says he should be made for the neder just in case, that he shouldn't be nene from the extra. Now, the question is, that you see from here, that the woman could vow, she can create a neder against future income. So at first, the Gemara would cite this as an example. Another example of a loy bala oila, because she's affecting a neder against her husband now on future income. She wasn't even paid yet. That paycheck didn't even come yet. How can she make a neder now on future money that's not in her possession? If she wants to make the neder after it's in her possession, that's something else. But how can something she says now, before she even received the money, the paycheck, how can the neder be chal? How can the neder could take effect on something that's not yet in her rishus? So this would be a proof.
Like a tree.
It's like what? Like a tree. It's like the apple. It's like the apples of the tree. So it shouldn't be effective. So the Gemara cites this as an example that perhaps Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion, like Rav that we cited earlier, that you could affect the transaction on something that's loy bala oil. But then the Gemara says something very similar to what we said regarding the tree. Says the Gemara, Omer Rav Huna Braid Rabbi Yeshua, Bo'ay Meres Yikdishu Yodai Lo'ay Sehem. Maybe the wording of the nether was not on the actual cash that's coming in, because the cash that's coming in is not yet hers. Maybe she articulated the nether regarding her hands that are now in the world. I don't want you to benefit from anything that my hands produce, and her hands are in the world. So just like we made this distinction regarding the fruit of the tree, you can't sell the future fruit of the tree, but you could sell the tree for its fruit. Or, for example, you could sell a piece of land vis-a-vis its produce. You can't make a nether on a future income on the cash that's not yet mine, but I would be able to make a nether that you can't benefit from the productivity of my hands, and that would memela aser, because if you would use the money, that would be benefiting from what my hands produced. The nether is mitzad my hands. The nether is not mitzad. It's not effective on the actual money. So these are some examples of loy baloil. And the question again stands that how was Esav able to sell the Ma'aras HaMachpelah? The transaction was performed before it was his. And we paskin that ain other machnadavar shlo baloil. Now, what is the actual chasar and what is the problem with selling something that's loy baloil? So there's a famous chakira in all of the yeshivas, and I'm sure we've all heard this before, that there are two pshatim, there are two different perspectives. What exactly is the problem with selling something that's not yet in the world? Why isn't it effective? We were saying over and over again that it's not effective. Why isn't it effective? There's a famous chakira. One side of the argument is that it's a chasarin because of smichas das. And the Mefarshim actually say this. There's a chasarin of smichas das, that if I want to affect the transaction now on something that's not yet in the world, there's a lack of smichas das. For lack of a better translation, there's a lack of sincerity. There's no gemiras das. People don't really, you can't really muster the conviction, so to speak, to sell something that's not yet in the world. There's no smichas das. Imagine if you would make a kinyan, and we would know, we talked about once a forced kinyan, somebody twists your arm to sell. Imagine if we know that although you're saying you want to sell it, but you're not really serious about selling it. So if the item in question is not yet in the world, so you can't muster, you don't have the proper smichas das, you don't really take this transaction seriously. The seller doesn't take it seriously, the buyer doesn't take it seriously, we don't even know if the object will ever become into existence. So the sale is just automatically void because such a transaction is not binding because there was no gmiras das. There's no smichas das. There's no, nobody's relying on this transaction because we don't know what the future will bring. That's one idea. The other idea is that it's more intrinsic than that. It's not a technicality that they're not sincere. The reason why you can't sell something that's loy bala oilam is because it's chaser, it's a chasaran in the etzim maisakna. It's a chasaran because the object is not here. So how can a transaction be effective? How can it be chal? How could it be effective on an object if the object is not here? In other words, I can sell you a piece of land that the sale will be effective 30 days from now. But that's because the land is mine now. So the kinyan is chal on the land. I'm selling you something now, and it will be effective in 30 days from now. Like you buy a house, and the closing is then, or the sale is effective then. But that's because the house is in the world. The house is yours. It's yours to sell. So you're performing the transaction now, and the chalos, the sale is effective in 30 days from now, because you're performing a transaction on something that's yours to sell. But if the object is not in the world, what is the transaction speaking to? What is the transaction effective on? That's why it can't be chal. So these are really two fundamentally different reasons. One reason is more of a technicality, because you're selling something and it seems seemingly it would be valid. It's just that there's a lack of sincerity. The second shot is more fundamental. The second shot is because there's nothing here. Since there's nothing here, there's nothing for the sale to be effective on. That's the chesaron. Now,
is it yet allowed to get involved with futures then?
Oh, so that's a good question. So we're going to soon see. So be'emes, so the truth is that there are actually makoris in the shas for both of these gedarim. So some of the forshim actually leave it as an open question, because if you look here in the Gemara, it seems like this is the problem. If you look here, it seems like that's the problem. Maybe it's a machlekes. Maybe both things are problems. But at the end of the day, there's no definitive answer. There's no definitive agree consensus what exactly the chesaron is. We know the words. We know the klal. You can't sell something that's not yet in the world. But there are different mashmois. There are different we get different impressions from different sugyas what the reason is. So here's the example. Here's the Gemara in Bava Metzia that we alluded to before. The Gemara says in Bava Metzia, this is a very interesting question. Boi mine Shmuel me Rav. So the story was like this. The story was that I sold you the Brooklyn Bridge. I lied. I claimed that something was mine, and I sold you a piece of land. It turns out the land was never mine to sell because it's stolen property. The land really belongs to somebody else, and I'm going around selling other people's land. So obviously the deed that I gave you is void. It was never mine to sell. What happens if I, after selling you something that's not even mine, I go and I purchase it from the nigzal? I go to the true owner, and I myself, the gazlan, I go and purchase it from the original owner. So the Gemara has a klal, it's very interesting, that when I purchase it from the original owner, it automatically belongs to the person that I sold it to before. So I'm selling you the Brooklyn Bridge. It's not mine at all to sell. Then I go to the city, and I actually purchase the Brooklyn Bridge from the city. The sale will be effective, and you will now own that bridge, even though at the time that I performed the transaction, it wasn't mine to sell. So the Gemara says, what happens if I buy the Brooklyn Bridge from the original owner, from the city? What happens now? So Omra Lei, so Rav says, when you performed that transaction originally, before it was yours, implicit in that sale, even though you didn't own the piece of land, you didn't own the Brooklyn Bridge, but implicit in that sale is that whatever rights you get to the field in the future, because I ended up buying the field in the future, I'm selling that to you. My time, why do we assume that? Maybe I was just a crook and I sold you the land before it was mine. So the answer is, Marzutra says, because deep down, I would rather not be called a thief. So the fact that I went out of my way to purchase the land shows that when I sold it to you before it was mine, that I really wanted it to be yours. And Ravashi says, Nihale the Lego Ganduse, because I want to keep my word. So either I'm afraid that you're going to call me a thief, you're going to get upset when you find out it wasn't really mine, or I just want to keep my word even if you wouldn't call me a thief, the Gemara says that there are practicalities in these different nuschois, in these nuances. Now, here's the question that's relevant to us. Maskev lo Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama asks, Mechdi, hay lokeach b'may kani le'lahay ara? How did you purchase the field in the first place? B'hai shtar. You purchased it with the deed that I wrote for you before it was even mine. Hai shtar chaspa ba'alma. The shtar is just a piece, it's just a pottery shard. It's worth nothing. It's worthless. Because when I sold you the land originally, it wasn't even mine. So here, the Gemara is actually asking the question that we were asking the whole time. The Gemara is asking, if I sell you a piece of land before it's mine, that's void. It's nothing. It's meaningless. How does it help that I bought the land later from the owner? It's too late. At the time that I performed the original transaction with you, it was not yet mine. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rava Tehebe Maminoi. The answer is because you trust me. Because of the fact that when you purchased this land from me, it was a stolen piece of land, you put your faith in me, but like Omer Leimidi, and you didn't challenge me, because Samachale, and you're relying on me, Torah Humaisile Gomero Machile. So I take it upon myself to purchase it from the original owner, and I have in mind to sell it to you. So the Gemara's answer is very cryptic. The question was very clear. The question was, how did the original transaction, how is that effective if it wasn't even mine at the time of the sale? The answer is, well, because you trust me, so I make it my business to buy the land and forward it to you. But what's the answer? How did that help? At the time that I sold you the land, it wasn't mine to sell. So Tosfos explains, Havikilu Omerle Sodazu Tehei Knuyalach Likish Ekhena. That it's as if the original transaction was stipulated that this field is not yet mine. You didn't realize this at the time. But because you trusted me, it's as if I said, I'm selling you the field now on condition that I buy the field. So the obvious question is, but how does that help? It's a loy bala oilam. It wasn't yours at the time of the sale. So the Gemara asks that. Masiv Rav Sheshis Masha Irish Mi Abba Mochalach. That if a person attempts to sell that which he will inherit later, that which my trap catches, I have a trap set in the pond. Any fish that go into my pond in the future should be sold. The halacha is that the sale is void. So you can't sell something before you have it. So how could you sell something before you inherit it? How can you sell something before you purchase it? That's the question. So says the Gemara, Omar Rami Bar Chama, Hagavra v'hati yufta. I see a person with a good question. Amarava gavra khazina tiyufta lechazina. I see a person, but I don't see a question. Why? Because the difference is very obvious. Hacha samchadaite. In one place, people are sincere. There's a certain reliance. Hacha samchadaite. Over here, you don't rely. So in other words, if Reuven sells something to Shimon, I want to sell you that which I might inherit. That nobody's relying on that. Why doesn't anybody rely on that? Because the father might sell that piece of land. There's no guarantee you'll get it. We don't know what's going to happen. Are you really going to end up inheriting all that money? Maybe your father will lose all that money by the time the inheritance time, the time to inherit arrives. So nobody relies on such a sale. Over here, the Gemara is clearly saying that when I sold you the Brooklyn Bridge originally, I don't want to be called a liar. I don't want to be called a thief. I want you to trust me. So I'm going to make it my business to purchase that item, that Brooklyn Bridge, and you will get the sale. Why? Because everybody relies. If the thing exists, even though I don't have the power to sell it now, but because I'm trying to sell it, there's a certain reliance on the sale. So clearly, according to Tosfos, you see from here that although the sale was effective although the transaction was performed before I owned the field, nevertheless, because there's a smichas das in the case, therefore it removes the problem of loy bala oilam. The entire problem of loy bala oilam was simply that there's no smichas das. And since over here there is a smichas das, the sale is effective. You see from Tosfos, the way Tosfos learned the Gemara, that the problem of loy bala oilam is a chasaron in smichas das. It's because it was a lack of sincerity. Since over here the Gemara is establishing that there was sincerity, that's why the sale is valid. Now the Kovet Shurim, that's Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, Hashem Yinakim Damai, the Rabbi Chanan says like this, in Baba Basra, in Reish Ayin Vav, Rabbi Chanan writes that, he says what we just said, that it's muchach in the Gemara in Bat Metzia, according to Tosfos, that the chesaron of Loi Bala Olam is a chesaron in Smichas Das, there's a lack of sincerity. But then Rabbi Chanan goes and brings a Gemara where it seems to imply that there's a different chesaron. The Gemara discusses, this was the Gemara that we mentioned earlier, about the woman making a neder on her future income. So the Gemara there discusses that perhaps you can make a neder on something that's Loi Bala Olam. This was that issue where the woman made the neder on her future income. The Gemara goes back and forth if there is a problem of Loi Bala Olam. Maybe a neder is different, says the Gemara. The Gemara entertains the notion that a neder is different. Shiny kainamais, perhaps a neder is different. Mitoich sha'adam oiser peris chaveri olav, because I can make a neder against myself. I can make a vow not to benefit from your object. So you see that I don't have to own the object in order to make a neder, at least against myself. So perhaps, just like I can make a neder against myself regarding your object, perhaps I can even make a neder on something that's not yet in the world. Now, if the problem of a loy bala oilam is merely a problem of smichas das, it's a chasaron in sincerity, how could the Gemara even attempt to compare? How can you entertain a comparison between making a nether against something that doesn't belong to me? I'm going to make a nether not to benefit from your house, from you. I don't have to own that object. I'm making a simple nether not to benefit from you. How can that have any indication that I could make a nether on a future object against you? What's the comparison? I can make a vow, a shavua or a nether, not to benefit from your object. But why would that even indicate that I could make a nether on something that's not yet in the world against you? The woman made a nether on her future salary. How can she do that? So we said it's a loy bala olam. The Gemara entertains maybe a nether is different. Maybe a nether you could make against someone else, just like you can aser your friend's object on yourself. What's the comparison? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman Zatzal says that you see from here that this Gemara seems to be understanding that the problem of Loi Bala Olam is that the nether can't, that the chalois, the transaction, cannot be effective on something that's not yours. It's not here. So since we see that you can make a nether on something that doesn't belong to you against yourself, the Gemara entertains, perhaps you can make a nether even on something that's not yet in the world. So you see from here that the underlying problem of Loi Bala Olam would be that the object is not in the world. It's not just about sincerity. It's because the object is not in the world. That's what you see from this Gemara. Now, someone asked the question. Here's another example. The Tashbats, the Tashbats and the Rami Rutenberg. The Tashbats brings from the Rami Rutenberg, even though Afogav the Ain of the Makum Davish Loi Bala Olam, even though normally you can't sell something that's not in the world, Bekan Shehu Minik Bnei Adam Tzarech Lakayim. So the Rami Rutenberg has an interesting shita that if the custom becomes, there's a concept that if there's a custom to acquire things, that becomes like the rule because of the Minhag HaMedina. So says the Rami Rutenberg that if the custom becomes to sell things, to sell futures that are not yet in the world, you have to fulfill the sale. The sale is effective, like we say regarding stimuta, that situmta, that's a rabbinic kinyan, that's a customary kinyan, a handshake. A handshake, if that becomes now a bona fide kinyan because of a custom, so you can use a custom, a minhag that was created through custom. So says the Rami Rutenberg, you can sell something that's not yet in the world if that becomes the custom to do so. However, the poskim bring that Rabbeinu Peretz there brings in the name of Rabbeinu Yechiel from Paris that it doesn't help because there is such a thing as a customary kinyan, but it has to follow by and large the guidelines of a normal transaction, and the object does have to be in the world. So there are those who want to say that this depends on these two tzedakim. If the problem of Loi Bala Olam is that you simply cannot affect a chalois, you cannot affect the transaction on something that's not here, so then I don't care if that becomes the custom. The custom is making a fundamental mistake. That becomes the custom, but it's ineffective. You cannot affect the sale on something that's not in the world. But if the whole problem of a Loi Bala Olam is a lack of sincerity, if that becomes the custom, if the custom becomes that such a sale is treated seriously, then it would be effective. So Rabbi Hanan Wasserman wants to say that these two opinions, if a customary sale can be effective on a loy bala oil, if the custom becomes to sell futures, so the Rami Rutenberg says that it's binding, and the Rabbeinu Peretz says that it's not, this would depend on these two understandings. If the problem is that you simply cannot affect the transaction on something that's non-existent, it wouldn't matter that that becomes the custom. The custom is wrong. The custom is trying to pull something off that's impossible. But if the entire problem was a lack of sincerity, then if the custom becomes to treat this sale seriously, then the halacha would be that it's binding. So with all of this, we can now go back to our story and we can understand the argument between the Rush and the Rivash. The Rush held that if Esav takes a Shavua, the Rush derives from here that you could sell something that's loy baloil. Why? Because the Rush holds, like his Rebbe, the Rami Rutenberg, that the chesaron of a loy baloilam is that there's a lack of smichas das, because we assume you're not sincere. So if the person takes a Shavua, la'alume milsa, if the person takes a shvua to ratify what he's doing, to demonstrate sincerity, then there's a smichas das, and then the sale would be effective. So this would be an understanding for the Rush. The Rivash asks, what difference does it make that you took a shvua? How can you sell something that's loy baloilam? The answer is because the entire problem of selling something that's loy baloilam is that you're lacking in the smichas das. You're lacking in the sincerity. Says the Rush, if the moicher takes a sacred oath to ratify what he's doing, Esav swears that he's going to honor this mechira, Yaakov takes the sale seriously, Esav takes the sale seriously, and therefore the sale would be binding. That's what the Rush derives from the parsha of the mechiras Moras Machpelah. However, the Rivash says, I don't see any way this could work. How could the oath work? I understand that you could be bound by your oath, but how can it be legally effective from the transaction, from the Choshen Mishpat point of view? That's because the Rivash holds, like Rabbeinu Peretz, or the Rivash holds, like the Mashmoyes of the Gemara Iksubis regarding the Nedarim, that there's a more fundamental problem in the Loy Bala Olam. The problem is that the object is not here. If it's not yours to sell, the transaction cannot be effective. And that's why the Rivash doesn't see any way that even an oath would be effective. Now, just to conclude with something practical, we talked about a little bit about futures. We talked about how the wording of the transaction can be worded in such a way that the sale is effective on something that is in the world right now. We talked about how the custom of a stitumta to create a sale, if the minhag becomes to sell something, to sell futures, the Marami Rutenberg and the Rush would say that it's good. There's another common example where you have boinim, you have developers in item Yud Dalid. So very often contractors, developers, they're building new homes, they're creating a new development, and people put money down for a future home. So I bought a house. Where's the house? Oh, the house wasn't even built yet. I bought a house. How can you buy a house before the house was even built? So could the contractor, could the developer, could he back out? Could he sell the house to somebody else? It's actually a question. What if the project goes kaput and he stops building the homes? That's one issue. Is he obligated to continue building? Or another question, if he does complete the home, does he have to honor his deal with you? Can he decide to sell the house to, could he sell the house to someone else? So it depends. If you're buying the land, so then the land would belong to you. You bought the land already, if he's building on your land. But what about the house itself? If I build the house, do you automatically own the house? Or if I'm not selling you the land yet, you're buying a house, is anything to be said about that? So in Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat Simen Samach, so it says, if a person obligates himself, and this ties into what we've been discussing, if a person obligates himself, he's mechayiv himself to follow through on a monetary deal, even though the object in question is not yet here, he's chayiv to follow through on his ischayivus. Now the Shulchan Aruch itself says, afa gavda ein adam makn davish lo bala oilam, even though you can't affect the transaction on something that's not yet in the world, says the Shulchan Aruch, hani milin kishehikne b'loshen mecher, that's if I'm trying to sell you something that's not yet here. It's very important, the wording. I'm going to sell you a house that I plan to build. I'm selling you the house now. were performing a transaction now on a house that's not yet built. That would be void because you tried to affect the transaction on something that's not yet here. I would have to return the money. The sale's not valid. But if you're giving me money and I'm mechayev myself, I'm taking upon myself a personal monetary obligation to do something for you, to build the house for you, so then that could be effective. If a person says, avo b'loshen chiyuv, if the person's obligating himself to build a house, kigoyin sh'omar, havi olai edim, the person says in front of witnesses that these witnesses should be witnesses. She'ani mischayev l'ploini b'kach b'kach, I'm hereby obligating myself to do such and such for my friend, chayev, hu shekana miyadai, provided that you perform the kinyan. If you perform the kinyan, you can obligate yourself. Now, if you recall, we mentioned Rav Nachman. We paskin like Rav Nachman that you cannot affect a sale on a loy bala oilam. But Rav argued, Rav held you can even affect a sale on a loy bala oilam. But even Rav agrees you can back out before the object comes into existence. Says the Tzais HaChoshen, even according to the Rashba, that you can back out on a shibud, if I borrow money from you and then I purchase a piece of land, that the piece of land could automatically be mortgaged as collateral for the loan that occurred before I purchased the land. That's because when I borrowed the money, the land was not yet in existence. So I can block the shibud, the lien, from being chal on the land. But says the Tzais HaChoshen, if you obligate your guf, if you accept upon yourself a personal obligation to sell that house when it's built, so that obligates you. Not that he owns the house, but you have an obligation towards him. You are meshabed yourself monetarily with the kinyan, and you can't back out. So depending on the wording, if I said, I'm going to build the house for you, so then I can't back out of that because I was mechayed myself to build the house. If I say, I'll sell the house when it's built, so then technically I have no obligation to build the house. Because if you look carefully, if you read the agreement carefully, I never obligated myself to build the house. I simply said that when the house is built, I'm obligating myself to sell the house. So it would actually depend on the wording of the arrangement, but a person could potentially obligate himself to deliver something that he does not yet have in his possession. That's a shibud. This would be analogous to selling the tree for its fruit, because you're not selling the future house. You're taking upon yourself a monetary obligation to build the house or sell the house. Okay, Yashar Koach, everybody.
This conference is no longer being recorded.